Deep breathing is like a deep inner cleansing. It purifies your body and your mind of negative thoughts and feelings. Now, imagine that you are effortlessly floating in a calm sea of shimmering emerald green water. It is warm, and there is a brilliant golden sun shining directly overhead. You can feel its golden rays spreading warmth throughout your entire body, penetrating, soothing, relaxing every muscle, every nerve. You are gently floating farther and farther out into the tranquil sea. You are calm and at peace. Green and gold are the colors of prosperity and abundance, and they are the colors that are surrounding you now. See the shimmering diamond sparkles dancing upon the emerald green sea. See the golden rays of the sun.
I'm tired of this. You don't have to live like this, you know. He had wanted me to get a gun to protect myself, but I told him, no, not with your little brothers in the house. I didn't want one. I want you to understand that my son was not a gangster. He was a loving person. He was a sweet person. All he did was love. He didn't want to hurt anybody, and if he did want to hurt somebody, it was because they tried to hurt him first.
For the WTO is the General Agreement on Trade and Services, the GATS Treaty. That's the one that says corporations can go try and get sanctions if you don't let them steal your school system. Or something like that. Okay, we're done with that part now, too. So anyway, with that shit going on, that's why we're here, I assume. And a woman interviewing me for Brave New Wave on CBC last night in Montreal said, yeah, but what about all these people who are just going to show up just to kind of hang out and maybe get laid or something like that?
Say, B.C. Crandall. Now, first of all, we were talking about floating cities a little bit ago, and we lost that. We were talking about creativity, and applied creativity is very interesting to me. I'd like to readdress that idea of where these wonderful ideas come from, and then tie in a little bit of the hard engineering of some of these fantastic ideas. So let's go back to the creativity and where it is that the idea came from, and pull that into linguistics, and then go on to the floating cities and then into the hard technology.
All right. I think we can take a cruise through there. The creativity or the thinking for me is, I guess I have accepted the fact that I am a primate that has been infected with a certain form of languaging, and my work, I guess, that I consider is taking in and cross-pollinating memes in various forms, and it has slowly, in my life, evolved and come up to a point where it is clear to me that what is necessary is the direction.
Ma più entusiasmato, si sta? Culo al frigio.
È un po',
non è che.
Senti, mettiti qui che chiamo il ragazzo, se dovresti fare un provino di quelli veloci, perché lì c'ha il treno alle 7. Vediamo un po' cosa riuscite a fare insieme, cercate di lavorare per le telecamere. Ok, good luck.
Was, hey, great. I mean, it shouldn't, protesting should not be just a grim struggle of the proletariat against the big, bad, fascist pigs.
For the past few weeks, I have felt like an author whose book was fortuitously banned somewhere, except that all the articles about it are giving the wrong author's name. Because Microsoft described the GNU GPL as an open source license, and most of the press coverage followed suit, most people, of course, just innocently don't realize that our work has nothing to do with open source, that in fact we did most of it before people even coined the term open source.
I believe John mentioned Bob Beck's name in doing research on that. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you a couple more questions. We really don't have a lot of time in the program left, and you know, this is just so a wealth of information.
To an end so suddenly here in New York City when the bomb factory in the private house blew up that she was living on borrowed time anyway.
We are in the free software movement.
To me, that what is
is what is necessary is the direction in my writing, which is the issue of survival. So
how often and how well and how they...
What do you mean by established norms of sexuality?
Light sink into your body, bathing you, filling you with warmth and satisfaction. Take a long, slow, deep breath now. And as you inhale, feel the warm glow of the golden light saturate your body. Exhale. Let doubt and tension drift away.
After just 1 hour of desk work,
unrequited love, and yet it motivates them, it grounds their lives, and it inspires them. And in a way, it might be, I'm just talking off the cuff now, but you spurred this on. In a way, I think you could think about God in that courtly love context, even if it's an unrequited love, at least unrequited as we understand it in this world. It can still, like it did for the medieval poets, ground our lives, offer us hope and inspiration, and motivate us. And I think even though the beautiful woman in the poetry never interacts with the person who yearns for her, nevertheless, she is real. She may have certain fantastical elements attached to her that the poet ascribes to her, and I'm sure plenty of us do the same thing with God. But nevertheless, at the core, she's real. She exists, and she inspires. And I think we can think of God in a similar way.
All he did was love. He didn't want to hurt anybody. And if he did want to hurt somebody, it was because they tried to hurt him first. For one, the reason why he left home was to get away from the gangs here. They all would go up there to go out. And then that's when I guess he started, like, you know, meeting all the girls. So from there, he just kept going back and forth up there.
Know what we're gonna do? We're gonna have meetings, God damn it.
Oh, right. Well, yes, indeed. It certainly is a pleasure to be with you. Oh, right. Oh, right. Well, 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 yes. It certainly is a pleasure to be with you. To be with you as your spiritual journey continues to accelerate. It is a joy, truly a joy, to be working with you as together we venture into the magic of your spiritual ancestry. Now, this cassette is not intended in any way to be a substitute for all the beautiful and wonderful work that so many of you did during the April intensive, harnessing the power of your spiritual ancestry. No, it is not intended as a substitute. It is not intended to be a replacement. It is intended certainly as a supplement to complement and to augment the very beautiful, the very powerful and in many times the very poignant work that you did during those 4 days. And truly, for those of you who were there, it was unbelievably magical. And so many of you have written in about some of the realizations and some of the changes, about how things finally fitted together for you in a way like never before. And some of the results and some of the manifestations where they go beyond any description we could give them. And we congratulate you. And as we said at the time, we were very honored to be a part of that process. And so very honored to hear you talk of your feedback from that process.
Ask you two things. First of all, how long has this information been out, and I mean, why hasn't it been made more available?
Well, it's available from us. It's been out since 1986. We've been talking and publishing and trying to get it out since 86.
Possession, we worry about loss. Even the most beautiful birth and the most gracious death come with pain, for entering and leaving the body is inherently a painful process. We know that throughout our day, experience changes from pleasant to neutral to unpleasant and back again ceaselessly.
Good evening, New Metaphysics, the WZ Network. Network of One. And isn't that so archetypal, actually? In this macro-micro type of a mattress type of matrix. 90.3 FM. Very important secret number codes for certain secret undercover listeners. Everybody else, just ignore the whole thing. Of course, those secret special listeners may ignore it also if they don't pay attention. Of course, what is the secret for? I personally have no need to know, I have to admit. Therefore, for me, for my reality, I don't know. The show continues, however. New Metaphysics, a warm, loving kind of radio programming for some secret special listeners with the decoder ring. Not through their nose, however, that will disable secret special embedded cues and stuff. So don't do that with it. Out of Newton, Massachusetts, home of Indians who have come and gone and sort of maybe come back a little bit, but who can tell? Although I don't want to slander any group of special interests, and those Indians have wreaked havoc on our capitalist syndrome. So I guess I can emulate a slander or two during programming. So I don't know who I'm talking about, so I just have to make it all up. A radio program for the squeamish. I mean, they have to have their own show someplace. During tonight's programming, you are invited, with or without condoning, and the noun from that gerund, whatever it is, to think bad thoughts, whatever they are. You can do the concomitant good thoughts too if you're a junkie and can't help yourself. I understand. A problem that has plagued your peoples for mega generations, which is a lot, assuming they ever existed, which is up for debate in some circles. We won't be dealing with them tonight, however, so just relax. Your history remains intact, vouchsafe to you. I mean, only by me, though, so don't let go of your sidearms just on my say-so. Gary Geiserman is this person, named with an identity bordered for Earth experience, as per regs and user certifying bylaws and things, legal things. Because in the beginning was the logo, the naming by your soul. Ooh, man. Getting heavy. So if you make a machine capable of emulating a perception of human thinking, do you have to pay royalties to the soul, or can you just copy cop for free? That's not really the question that's pertinent, however, but since the question that is pertinent is over your heads, I will talk down to you in the guise of poetry, rapping, or just plain little R radio programming.
This unending change is itself a source of pain, and our habitual reactions to it can create in us a continuous sense of struggle.
See what I'm talking about?
Subject. Stephen King's...
talking about literature?
We are now.
Okay.
You see, I was segueing abruptly.
You see that? It's dialogue without segue.
Woo!
That was segue without... Never mind.
Yeah, Stephen King gave up on the plant, I guess.
Here's the fundamental problem I have with him giving it up. As he said, well, not enough people are paying him, my percentage is down. He's doing it on an absolute measure. Pudge pointed out, Pudge said, I paid once, but I downloaded it for the Palm Pilot and for my desktop PC. So that counts as, you know...
fair use.
You know. Well, but King doesn't count it that way.
Sure. Well, I have a bigger issue with that. I mean, the first couple times around, he had so much publicity, and it was all about, you know, Stephen King, blah, blah, blah. Now I have a couple of other issues. Number one, I don't think Stephen King's a very good writer. So you can disagree with me or not, but, you know, I wouldn't pay money to read anything that he's written in the last 10 years. Okay, that's just me. The other issue with that is just that with all the publicity that's going to fade out, you know, it's going to be gone. Of course his percentages are going to drop. What did he expect? And the other problem is, how many writers fucking make the kind of money Stephen King makes? And how many people, like, think that, you know, what he thinks is a valid amount of money to make? You know, most people would probably kill for the amount of money that he made, even off of his failed little experiment.
Well, and there's a lot of writers, too, that would kill just to have 10,000 people read their book,
yeah,
regardless of whether they make any money from it or not.
Yeah. You know? There's a lot of slimy issues that go down there, but you know, whatever. It doesn't really matter what Stephen King thinks. You know, things are going to change anyway.
This particular cassette is meant to complement, to augment that work and that magic.
when we first, you know, that was really when we finally became convinced of the whole innocent scenario.
Coming at it from a personal angle,
you nine drawing still image products, still images, and then making product out of those.
Primates can continue the game that we have going.
And I'm going to speak about what the free software movement is about, what it means, what we have done. And because this is partly sponsored by a school of business, I'll say some things more than I usually do about how free software relates to business and some other areas of social life. Now, some of you may not ever write computer programs, but perhaps you cook. And if you cook, unless you're really great, you probably use recipes. And if you use recipes, you've probably had the experience of getting a copy of a recipe from a friend and sharing it.
And under the royalty-free mode of selling collections of images that people could use for publishing. And we started out with black and white images and gradually worked toward color as the demand for color came into being. Probably in about 1992 or 1993, we started doing color imagery. And that's when I did photorealistic things, and I stopped drawing images. I started doing photorealistic scans of marble and wood, and mostly we've been a background textures kind of company up to that point. And then it was about 1995.
Which radically contradicts, you know, these orthodox scientific views. That kind of evidence tends not to be preserved in that way. So at the time, my co-author went to visit William Meister. He had this object in his garage, and Richard took some photographs of it. And you know, by analyzing the photographs, we could see that the shape of the imprint did not deviate in the slightest bit from a shoe impression. And actually, you could see how the heel mark, the place where the heel was marked in the impression, was worn down at the appropriate place, just as a normal shoe would be worn. If you look at your shoes, you'll find that the heel is worn down in a particular place. So it was really quite interesting. So that was found in layers of rock that are about 500 million years old.
Indulging in the dynamiting?
Well, it certainly looks that way. If that bomb hadn't gone off in her hands, as it apparently did, it's certain that the situation would have drastically changed in this country. This particular group of people was apparently planning to stage real terror raids on the population of New York City. This bomb that killed her was wrapped in tape, which had been studded with roofing nails. And I talked to the chief medical examiner in New York, who examined her body, and he said that her body had been punctured by 160 or more of these galvanized roofing nails.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. I have a handheld mic, Shure. It's a Shure SM58, which is a pretty basic mic, but what's nice about that mic is it's a quiet mic, and it takes a lot of abuse without having sound, and the Javits Center is just brutal for recording sound.
Two great guys on the phone. I can really go for a coffee here, and these guys just get right at it. It's great.
Absolutely. I mean, I think TV is really coming in its own, and we're going to see some really great movies, and I think they're even going to be distributed in interesting ways.
They're dismembered literally in food production. A form of objectifying in women's magazines especially, you'll notice that there are a lot of ads that just have, say, a woman's legs or just a woman's torso. Shoulders. A lot of ads that just have, say, a woman's legs or just a woman's eyes or just a woman's lips and. That's a form of fragmentation of the female body.
When I realized that we needed to do something different, because we saw that the still image market was changing in a way that was negative for our company, so we decided to jump ship and move into video.
We're about 500 million years old. Now, also from that period of time, there was a very interesting report from Scientific American from the year 1852, which tells of a beautiful metallic vase that was found in solid rock near Boston, Massachusetts, as some workmen were doing some excavations for a building. And according to the published report, it was a very beautiful object with silver inlaid floral patterns. It was found in rock that, according to the modern geological reports, are again about 500 million years old.
Thank you.
a sterling reputation and close friend of the president. Recently confirmed into the Office of National Drug Control Policy, our new drug czar, Robert Hudson Wakefield.
The war on drugs is a war that we have to win, and a war that we can win. We have to win this war to save our country's most precious resource.
Son, your uncle, the brother of your wife, and all your captains. Let four horses be then attached to your limbs and driven in different directions until you are torn to pieces.
Just anticipating that the whole revolution that happened with desktop publishing.
So to have evidence of this kind going back that far, I mean, this is, according to the normal way of looking at things, there shouldn't have been any life on land whatsoever at that time.
The lunatics have taken over. Taken over. The truth is, the lunatics have taken over the asylum.
And you've probably also had the experience, unless you're a total neophyte, of changing a recipe. You know, it says certain things, but you don't have to do exactly that. You can leave out some ingredients, you know, add some mushrooms because you like mushrooms, put in less salt because your doctor said you should cut down on salt, whatever. You can even make bigger changes according to your skill.
The lunatics have taken over. Taken over. The truth is, the lunatics have taken over the asylum again.
They're wicked.
Century revolution.
To get started on a wonderful day, here's what you do. Grab your hand.
Wash your face.
Comb your hair.
Before you get dressed each morning, every day.
Grab your hand. Wash your face. Comb your hair.
Before you come down to breakfast, every day.
Your hands are sure to shake hands with someone whose hands are sure to be clean. Your hair is where your face begins, and your face is the very first place to be seen.
Scrub your hands.
Wash your face.
Comb your hair.
Before you go out
each morning, every day.
Yes, sir, and then, kids, something most important. Reach for that toothbrush. And of course, don't be in a rush.
Don't rush.
Slowly, carefully brush your teeth. In front, in back, on top, beneath. You'll all
As Donna Haraway points out, there are no innocent positions in life, and it is a question of choosing what path of structuring. And so my effort is to, one, see and get across the plausibility of this technology, because it will come not subtly, it will come not slowly. And this is the piece that Ted Kaler writes in the book that's coming up. He writes about the in vivo nanoscope and the two-week revolution, the in vivo nanoscope being a device to see real-time biological processes and observe what is going on at a molecular level.
Spiritual ancestry. It is a term that is used by many to encourage you to return to a simpler time and space, to return to a time when nature and humanity were... when nature and humanity were in balance and in harmony. However, thought from Margaret Mead, who correctly suggested there was never a time that nature and humanity were in balance and harmony. It never has occurred. The whole dynamic of life is the process of searching for, looking for that harmony personally, individually. But there never was a time in the history of humanity that there was ever that natural balance, that natural harmony. And furthermore, in fact, there was never a time that life was simple. Admittedly, maybe some of the answers to problems were simple because they didn't have the full range of capacity because of the lack of technology and the lack of knowing. But nonetheless, the problems were as complex as they ever are. And to look at a situation and say simply because the answers were simple, therefore life was simple, is indeed a very narrow and indeed at times a very blind view of it. No, there are many who will encourage you to return to this simpler time and space, to return to this time of human balance and harmony with nature, but such a time never exists, you see. Often they are suggesting it as a desperate choice of having no answer to the problems and the intricacy of the problems of your current world, of seeing that indeed the problems are just as complicated, but the answers are now more complicated, and therefore seek to return to a myth, seek to return to a never-never land, not unlike Peter Pan and Tinkerbell, but such a place does not exist.
Our children... 68 million children have been targeted by those who perpetrate this war. And protecting these children must be priority number one.
Is important and welcome too, but not everybody wants to wind up like that. And some of the spontaneous protests, the early, what was it, 90 or 91 when the Gulf War happened, and as soon as people found out we were bombing Iraq, people just started walking off their jobs in downtown San Francisco, pouring into the streets, and the we're at meetings, goddammit, people sort of announced that they were the leaders of the protests and everybody should follow them, but then people just showed up, party! And spewed past them, and for three nights, the people took back San Francisco. And it wasn't a grim struggle. It was more like Mardi Gras. It was Mardi Gras, several thousands of people, several miles long, going all through downtown and blocking the Bay Bridge and several other things. Maybe somebody got laid. I don't know. It's better than doing it at a pickup bar, if you ask me, or something like that. So it's not necessarily a bad thing for people just to show up to check it out, even if you're curious. But I think the gut reason most people are showing up, even if they don't know exactly what the FTAA is, or whatever, is they're fed up to here with corporate dictatorship and elected leaders signing the laws and the power over to corporations, to the point where when you look at what they're doing with NAFTA, GATT, WTO, FTAA, that is not even capitalism anymore. That's feudalism.
Free the innocent. Tupac Amaru, it is my sentence that your tongue be cut out of your mouth. That mute and bleeding you witness the execution of your wife, your son, your uncle, the brother of your wife, and all your captains. That four horses be then attached to your limbs and driven in different directions until you are torn to pieces. As he decreed, so it was done. I bear him no hate. Hate is no consolation beyond the grave. I bear his people no hate. For no people is to be held to account for what the wicked do. I affirm before God that no race has been created without beauty and without ugliness. And if there is ugliness among us, there is also beauty. And if there is enmity, there is also friendship. And if there is hate, there is also love. Do not tolerate the Indian. He tolerates another man who thinks another is less than he. Give us only your friendship and your love, and only let us live.
She lowered her body and I felt her hands on my hips, the nearness of her breath on my penis. Her firm, lovely ass slid slowly up my stomach, my chest, toward my face. Then what happened? Claire kissed me all the way up my leg, every inch, so slow, so focused. I was used to overheated college boys, but Claire was different. She nibbled, bit, licked, kissed, two steps forward, one step back, and if she found a spot she liked, behind my knee or on my calf or far up on my inner thigh, she'd stop and linger.
So we saw it as a second chance to come out with a whole new kind of media product.
And now your current
hardware setup is actually quite beefy, isn't it? Dual processor?
Right, well, we keep up with the very fastest Macs. It really makes sense for us. Video is so intensive, requires so much horsepower and disk space that we're not saving money by holding on to Macs 3 or 4 years using the same stuff, except for, well, we have some real old Macs just as domain servers and things like that. But as far as our production, everybody has the latest Macs because it just makes all the sense in the world to be as fast as we can with our production.
Now, in terms of the tools outside of the Mac that you're using in your production, I would imagine, is it all DV? Do you do a lot of conversion to DV, or do you start out with a lot of DV?
Well, we don't do a whole lot with DV, frankly. It's a format we have stayed away from until just last year. We started a DV product line, but most of our products, a little bit higher end than that, since they're shot on film, if you just immediately convert that to DV, you've just thrown away so much quality and information.
In order to legitimize such a quest, they often attach a very powerful term of spiritual ancestry to it, but in that sense it is still a fantasy, it is still a never-neverland, it still never existed. And therefore we would suggest in that desperate choice, we would caution you against that view, that concept of spiritual ancestry. There are others that will use the term to offer an answer to the problems of the technological nightmare that your present reality seems to be. There will be those that will tell you that the only solution is to return to your ancestry, return to the old traditions, return to the old ways. Indeed, the shamans among them will encourage you to return to shamanism. The American Indians will entreat you with the Native American customs, beautiful and wondrous as they are. The witches entice you with the mystery and the magic of Wicca. The Eastern mystics extol the virtues of Eastern thought and religion. The fundamental and evangelical, and even the most moderate of Christians, will invite you to return to the church as though it were some sort of panacea, as though somehow all the issues will somehow evaporate and disappear if you show up every Sunday. The Orthodox and Reformed of the Jewish and the Islamic faiths similarly will encourage you not only to return to the religion, but to return to the region as well. But you see, each of these directions may or may not be the particular true ancestry of even those who are beseeching you.
Before the night 3,000 turkeys died, we moved 13,000 turkeys to the range. This requires some explanation. Turkeys spend their first 16 weeks in a heated brooder house. Then they are put outside to range in fenced enclosures. Usually men in trucks come and take them to the range at night. This time, Daddy decided we'd herd them ourselves. It looked simple enough. We made a temporary chute of wire fencing that ran from the double-end doors of the brooder house 50 yards to the pen. We would get behind the turkeys in the brooder house, shout, wave old shirts and gunny sacks at them, and they would run out the doors, through the chute, and into the pen. And that's the way it worked in the first brooder house.
Inhale. The warm golden light surrounds you.
Exhale. Thoughts of limitation and lack float away. Inhale. Know that all the riches of the universe are yours to enjoy. Exhale. Doubt and fear drift away. Inhale. Clean, fresh air. Exhale. Release all tension and stress. Inhale. Going deeper into complete relaxation. Exhale. All the way relaxed. Inhale. Good. Exhale. You are now in a state of deep relaxation.
Her head lowered, and I felt her mouth gather up my penis. She slid it deeply into her mouth.
And it makes it impossible to see the whole human behind the representation. There is a whole human there.
And everything, we want you to believe it's 7 o'clock. Now we know it's not 7 o'clock.
You know what feudalism is? The old times in the Middle Ages where you have the king and the barons and the lords and the high castle and big moat around the castle and the
two-week revolution. evolution, which is an important concept in nanotechnology, that as the technology gets clearer and clearer and closer, with, in fact, will come from computers directly, essentially, because the direction will be molecular modeling done in computer systems, and those models will be able to engage, be able to hold in their virtual memory more and more atoms and get more and more complex structures, and then that will interface to either an AFM, atomic force microscope mechanism or some sort, to actually start building components. And so the direction will be humans working with computer systems that will be implementing the nanotechnological structures. At some point, and this is the crucial transition that nanotechnology confronts us with, at some point we will build a machine, a molecular machine, that has the capacity to create a copy of itself.
A copy of itself.
Here's Paul Mather with the Daily Drug Report.
Well, thank you, Wes, and hello, everyone. It looks like we've got a great weekend coming up with highs for everyone. And why is that? It's because we've still got that wave of cheap Afghani hash coming in from the coast. Let's have a look at the map. The hash is coming in from Victoria. It's coming up through the Kootenays, and then it's sticking around here in the Alberta region, creating this nice low-pressure hash situation that we've all been enjoying so much. Well, how much longer is it going to last? Unfortunately, we're forecasting an included front of cops coming in from Edmonton and Calgary and creating a high-pressure situation for dealers all along the border. That should be breaking up this pleasant hash system sometime soon, so if you and your family want to get out there and enjoy some hash, you better do it in the next couple of days. Turning to our hard drug radar cam, waves of smack are coming into Canada through the Maritimes. That's mixing with a large crack front that's coming up from the U.S. and creating low drug prices all throughout Ontario, although we shouldn't see too much of that pushing its way towards the west. A little bit closer to home, flurries of cocaine are a forecast for most major Canadian cities, with highs where you think you're Superman and lows where you're depressed and impotent. Turning to next week, a 30% chance of ecstasy and other forms of synthetic drugs appearing at raves in Edmonton, Calgary, and Winnipeg, 40% chance of magic mushrooms confusing Saskatoon, and... in Regina, they'll have beer and cigarettes. That's the Drug Report. I'm Paul Mather, and for anyone watching on acid, your face is melting. I'm just kidding. Have a nice trip.
Sounds like a good idea, hooray.
Yo, yeah.
Why don't we wind this thing down, Dwayne? Let's go home.
Back into our past, and I'm not sure I recall the context. May I confess I haven't read it since it was written.
The lips came from a whole person, but you don't see that. It makes it really hard to think of that. Person as what she is, a person. And in the case of animals, of course, they're dismembered literally. Thank you.
kids, or, you know, of a baseball game, you know, or something.
Sure.
But I think it's a great format for people who don't want to just invest and get into the industry, but still want to have a really high quality image. Digital 8 quality is pretty damn good. I mean,
now remember, guys, this is called Mac Media Pro, so we'll...
Yeah, but I like the little DVD tapes that can fit more in my pocket than you can, so there.
Yeah, professionally, yeah, absolutely. And also, the Pro Dex, there isn't a digital 8 Pro Dex.
That's correct.
So you really, you know, if you're going to be doing editing every single day, you don't want to use your camera, you don't want to use a consumer deck. You need a Pro Dex because the motors, just the transport just won't hold up.
And now, guys, I want to get a couple of things in.
Greatest archaeological cover-ups ever. Something that would change history. And it's something that I do talk about a lot in my Lost Cities books, is that, yes, there really are these amazing discoveries, whether it's 8-foot red-haired giants in caves and or other hundreds of mummies in caves in Springerville, Arizona, or what is apparently like an Egyptian city in the Grand Canyon.
A huge issue. I think one that just is very pressing is the meat industry.
Peasants tilling the land on the other side, hoping that they'll get enough to eat before the knights come down and take everything back to the castle. I mean, how different is that than with new feudalism, where every time we buy anything from Walmart, Shell, Microsoft, Warner Brothers, you name it, we are their serfs.
Nothing. Send it over to Newton and foist it out on the unwitting paying public. Thank you all for your advance payments of value units, since value is a compressed file today and scarce. For some reason, there's just not enough stuff on planet Earth and other make-believe stories. That's later on the later than late night radio programming. Since it isn't that late yet, we'll get to that later. New Metaphysics. The earlier. Gary the Geyserman. At present time, synced in to the aging process going on right now. I'm Hitman. I'm with it. I'm doing it with it. In sync. On WZBC out of Newton. Part of it's out of Newton. The rest of it is out of Newton. And then you people out there in the Matrix are just out of it. Capitalism, my friends. Make-believe shortages in all sectors, even in the growing sectors, closer to the belly button of the planet, there are shortages reported. And if there are non-shortages some places, they're not reported. Further news much, much later than it is now.
And more to the point, it even looks like feudalism now. They've put up a moat up on the hill. They put up a fence to keep out the peasants. That's feudalism. They're even admitting it's feudalism. But even if we all wind up getting up to the fence and no further, and all CNN reports is, oh, George Bush met with some leaders today. Here's a picture, and then they go on to the next story.
That this person in this lifetime may be an American Indian and therefore have within their bloodline a certain tradition does not mean that it is actually their spiritual ancestry. This may be the very first lifetime that they've explored that phenomena of American Indian tradition. Indeed, this may be the first encounter with shamanism or witchcraft. This may be their first lifetime in the Eastern religions and philosophies in the Far Eastern lands, and therefore it is perhaps a part of their current heritage, certainly so, but not a part of their spiritual heritage necessarily. And therefore, even those who entreat you, who offer to even to admonish you, often are not encouraging you in the direction of even their true heritage or their true ancestry. And certainly it may not be your particular ancestry. You see, most who so entreat and encourage you are doing so one-dimensionally, not because they're wrong or bad, but simply they haven't thought it through, or they haven't found the depth, the conceptual, perceptual depth of the truth. And therefore they are defining spiritual heritage and spiritual ancestry by bloodline, by the matrilineal, by the patrilineal only.
Turkeys hesitated at the door, walked out cautiously, then moved through the chute and dispersed. Followed. It took about an hour. Daddy was pleased. "Let's work straight through," he said. "We'll be done by 10. By the time turkeys have been in a brooder house for 16 weeks, the air is filled with ammonia, feather particles, and dust. The stench is overwhelming. After an hour in the brooder house, your lungs hurt for a day. You can contract disabling lung diseases from working only a week in a poultry house.
Functionally useful recipes of any kind. Now, recipe is a lot like a computer program. A computer program is a lot like a recipe, a series of steps to be carried out to get some result that you want. So it's just as natural to do those same things with computer programs. Hand a copy to your friend. Make changes in it because the job it was written to do isn't exactly what you want. You know, it did a great job for somebody else, but your job is a different job. And after you've changed it, that's likely to be useful for other people. Maybe they have a job to do less like the job you do. So they ask, hey, can I have a copy? Of course, if you're a nice person, you're going to give a copy. That's the way to be a decent person. So imagine what it would be like if recipes were packaged inside black boxes. You couldn't see what ingredients they're using, let alone change them. And imagine if you made a copy for a friend, they would call you a pirate and try to put you in prison for years. That world would create tremendous outrage from all the people who are used to sharing recipes. But that is exactly what the world of proprietary software is like. A world in which common decency towards other people is prohibited or prevented. Now, why did I notice this? I noticed this because I had, because of my good fortune in the 1970s to be part of a community of programmers who shared software. Now, this community could trace its ancestry essentially back to the beginning of computing. In the 1970s, though, it was a bit rare for there to be a community where people shared software. And in fact, this was sort of an extreme case because in the lab where I worked, the entire operating system was software developed by the people in our community, and we'd share any of it with anybody. Anybody was welcome to come and take a look and take away a copy and do whatever you wanted to do. There were no copyright notices on these programs.
Tiny barbed pieces of feather dig into the tissue of your lung and never let go. But we didn't know that then.
Hears that he was probably given some validity by the local kids because he came from Milwaukee.
Shane brought him in and introduced him. He thought it was so great. This big black dude had his same last name. Like I said, I didn't know he was even from Milwaukee and why he was in Appleton.
He was black. He came from Milwaukee. Therefore, he should be a gang member. Unfortunately, that's a stereotype that is quite prevalent, I think, among the kids here.
He was going to try to go to the technical college up there. But he really wanted to stay up there and better his life.
So do you think Jermaine was a real gangster, or you don't know?
I believe he's a real gangster.
But we didn't have a lot of information that connected him directly to a gang, and he was a hardcore gang member down in Milwaukee and was tightly involved in gangs. We didn't find anything to really support that.
There has been progress and there has been failure, but where we have fallen short, I see not a problem. I see an opportunity. An opportunity to correct the mistakes of the past while laying a foundation for the future.
For example, about 10 million farm animals die or are killed each year for food. The Animal Welfare Act, which governs the treatment of animals, excludes animals on factory farms. And most of the animals going through this torture are female animals.
Maintenant, Nicolas et Bart, vous dormez au fond de nos cœurs.
Torture are female animals.
Yeah,
Her body had been punctured by 160 or more of these galvanized roofing nails.
Picture of whether humans were there or not, but our whole picture of life on this planet may be in need of some revision.
Many really understand the richness and the depth of an ancestry that does not necessarily follow bloodlines, though it can, does not necessarily follow bloodlines, but rather begins within the heavens, within the stars themselves, and wends its way through the mystique of Lemuria, the land that imagination forgot, and the majesty of Atlantis, and then posits itself ever so quietly, ever so personally, in a personal heritage. Personal heritage. You see, those who approach it one-dimensionally, those who assume their ancestry is the ancestry and the only one, or is somehow your ancestry as well, are often making a blind choice. Ever so personally, in a personal heritage of your choice.
Photograph up there?
That is Mark Furman pointing, see the envelope? Pointing under this neatly arranged cap and glove, supposedly just happened to fall right under that bush in that fashion. That's what you're asked to believe.
Especially since we've
been time. There was an interesting report from a scientific magazine called The Geologist, which told of a complete anatomically modern human skeleton that was found 90 feet below the surface of the ground in Macoupin County, Illinois, in the United States. And directly above the skeleton, according to the reports, there was a thick layer of slate rock, which was unbroken. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because sometimes when you're more orthodox scientists hear about, you know, a human skeleton being found in some very, very ancient layers of rock, the first thing that they say is, well, there's no mystery here whatsoever. You know, obviously what happened is only a few thousand years ago someone died, and his friends dug a grave deep into the ground, and they put the body down at the bottom, and some very ancient layer of rock covered it over, and that's why. You think you have found, you know, some human skeleton in some very, very ancient layer of rock. Technically, that's called intrusive burial. It does happen. Things like that indeed do happen. But in a case like the one I just mentioned that was reported in this scientific journal called The Geologist, the skeleton was found 90 feet below the surface, and people normally aren't digging graves 90 feet deep. And if they had dug a hole that deep, they still would have had to have gone through this thick layer of slate rock that was found above the skeleton. And according to the report, that layer of rock was unbroken, which means that the skeleton really does belong in the layer of rock in which it was found. Now, consulting with the Geological Survey of the state of Illinois, we found that the rock down at that level was roughly 300 million years old, which is really quite interesting. quite interesting.
You see, those who approach it one-dimensionally, those who assume their ancestry is the ancestry and the only one, or is somehow your ancestry as well, are often making a blind choice. Others will use the term of dealing with guilt and shame over what are the excesses of the 1980s. As people look back over the years of the Reagan administration or Reaganomics or the various terms that applied politically, or look over the excesses of the sort of the archetypal energy of a Donald Trump who spent and spent, and an Ivan Boesky who stole and stole, in that regard, looking back over the 80s, many are going to be embarrassed, many are going to feel guilty, many are going to feel a sense of shame, and will try to translate that to others and that seems to justify their own feeling. And in so doing, will encourage, will entreat people to return to their spiritual ancestry as a response to those excesses of the 80s. Many will find their answer in returning to a less complex life. And we say return because they're not really returning at all, but discovering something new, perhaps, but they are calling it old. And often people will, as a way to beat themselves up and a way to beat each other up, will respond or call upon one to return to the spiritual ancestry, not as a desperate choice, not as a blind choice, but rather as a guilt choice. And yet there will be those who will use the term to attempt to cling to a history that is ending. As we talked at the end of 90 and 89, as we have talked subsequently through 90 and 90 and into 90 and 91, during this decade, this most monumental decade, the impact and the influence, the control of the past is diminishing. History is coming to an end. And that the influence and the dominion of the future is going to be increasing. And although that sounds wonderful when you write it down, it becomes for many very frightening when they start living it. And as the past and precedent seems to relinquish, when the advice of the experts based upon what has transpired before finds less and fewer and fewer ears to listen and fewer correctnesses in their reactivities, we would suggest as the future increases its influence, many will attempt to cling to the past. Many will attempt... the power of the past, the power that is dying and being replaced by the influence and the power of the future. And therefore, in that same thing, they will invent or create or expand the significance of the term spiritual ancestry as a way to cling desperately to that past. And truly, this is a fair choice. You see, because your spiritual ancestry is not really a time or space. Your spiritual ancestry is not the past, nor is it an idealized world you should somehow feel guilty for not having or for even wanting. Nor is it a community that should be sealed away somewhere up in the mountains or off in the wastelands or in whatever sort of quasi-military organization that it could be contained within. No, it is not a community that should be created or recreated as some sort of New Age center. No. Your spiritual ancestry is not tangible. Your spiritual ancestry is a state of mind. It is a synergy. A whole that is made up of several component parts that is greater than simply the sum of those parts. When you can look at your spiritual ancestry and understand that it is a state of mind, that it is a synergy, it is in a sense a fusion that is discovered in your past, but is not your past. It is a synergy, a whole that is greater than the sum of its parts. Then, dealing with your spiritual ancestry can and truly will be a growth choice. You see, your spiritual ancestry is made up of your stellar origins. All life, as we have talked, originates as raw energy. and develops from raw energy to subatomic particles to atomic particles to atom to molecular structure that then becomes mineral and then plant and animal and then the human animal. Each phase thinking that the height of its own set must be all that is. From human animal to become the human being and to become the human potential and the human metaphysician and the human spiritual being, and each rung on it goes. But the raw energy, the original energy, sources itself in a star system that is called Sirius. And there are those who all of you have within you a certain stellar origin from Sirius that may be repeated in that of the Pleiades or in that of Sirius itself, but nonetheless your ancestry begins with the influence of Sirius. And then wends its way, developing in the patterns of Lemuria, the essence of that goddess energy, the essence of the adventurer, the land hidden in a gentle mist that exists even now beyond the bridge of belief, a land that imagination forgot and that imagination can remember. Your ancestry then surfaces in that of Atlantis, a majestic land, a powerful land that has gotten a very bad PR rap, if you will. For yes, it was destroyed, not once, twice, but thrice. But each of its destructions, in each of the deaths of Atlantis, the seed of spirituality was released. Like a dandelion gone to seed, the gentle winds blew the gentle fibers all over the planet. And as a result of those destructions, pods, if you will, spiritual pods, some of them in that of Italy and Greece, that in your mythology is referred to Mount Olympus and the gods Zeus and Hera and their entire family.
We moved the temporary fence to the doors of the second brooder house. When we threw open the doors at the end of the second house, it was 9 a.m. The sun streamed in the open doors on turkeys that had never seen direct sunlight. The one thing you can count on with turkeys is that you never know how they are going to react. I've seen turkeys clamor against a fence trying to get into a range fire. I've seen them rush toward a screaming child trying to kill it, and I've seen them run from a screaming child, spooked and terrified.
Torture our female animals, chickens, cows. And the experiences of the cow, of these animals on these factory farms is similar in a way to the experiences of women. For example, there's forced reproduction issues, mutilation, which calls to mind FGM, female genital mutilation. Cows, for example, are inseminated on what the industry itself calls rape racks, where they are held down and basically with syringes, raped with syringes to impregnate them. Pigs are kept in gestation crates, which are these barren metal enclosures where pigs are kept prisoners pregnant for most of their lives. And chickens endure probably the worst conditions in factory farms. The chickens are forced to lay eggs until they're depleted, at which point they are sent to slaughter. And, of course, cows are kept in state of forced lactating, where we then take their milk. And their young are taken away so that their milk can be given to our young.
The AIDS establishment doesn't really want to discuss this whole concept, at least in this country. It's we're considered to be crackpots and crazy and not tenable and a host of other reasons, but from our viewpoint it's the only answer that really makes sense.
This takes not only new ideas, but perseverance. This takes not only resources, but courage. This takes not only government, but families. I've laid out it.
A sterling reputation and close friend of the president. Recently confirmed into the Office of National Drug Control Policy, our new drug czar, Robert Hudson Wakefield.
The war on drugs is a war that we have to win, and a war that we can win.
We have to win this war to save
our country's most precious resource.
Our children. 68 million children have been targeted by those who perpetrate this war. And protecting these children must be priority number one. There has been progress and there has been failure. But where we have fallen short, I see not a problem. I see an opportunity.
An opportunity to correct the mistakes of the past while laying a foundation for the future. This takes not only new ideas, but perseverance. This takes not only resources, but courage. This takes not only government, but families. I've laid out it. I have laid out a 10-point plan that there's a war on drugs, then many of our family members are the enemy. And I don't know how you wage war on your own family.
on the good days, feel like I get it. Like, it all makes sense. I can stay in the moment. I don't have to control everything in the future. And I believe everything is going to work out fine. On the bad days, I just want to grab the phone and start dialing numbers. I want to pull my hair and run through the streets screaming. But thanks to the people I've met in these rooms, like Margaret and Jim and Sarah, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna make it through today.
Like to share?
my name is Robert, and my wife Barbara and I are here to support our daughter Caroline, and we're here to listen.
It as realistic and gritty as possible.
I wanted it to feel like, you know, I was chasing it and I was finding it as it happened.
So much of this picture is handheld. You know, Steven himself is an operator of one of the cameras. That's almost unheard of for a director of a film.
So he's coming in somewhere. He's coming in right there.
There's a quality of a reality that's been captured.
Energy is more important than perfection.
Ray, wait a minute!
Perfection is boring. What's exciting is something that is alive, and things that are alive have flaws, and I'm all for the accident that happens on camera.
Here we go, picture.
You're working with a director who...
What we finally ended up with is a kind of mosaic. It's such a topic that's riddled with contradictions. You really needed to have different strands vibrating off each other so as to give you the whole portrait.
Away in peace. I speak for the silent mass, for the first America. I speak of the America that can be. The America of all races living together, Indian and white and black and yellow. From beyond the grave and the dry and folded years, I say to you, hold out your hand, and a day will come when we shall put in it a flower that will adorn the world.
Lightly, and at the same time she eased her ass down onto my face. I placed a hand on each cheek and spread her apart.
simply don't think
that AIDS is a ethnic-specific weapon, and I'll tell you the reason why. I mean, it may have. I mean, it may have come out of that. It may have come out of that intent.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I don't think that is the case is because if you look at the whole course of infectious diseases, I think the clearest example would be syphilis. If you read Bad Blood, which was written by Jones, which is a discourse on the Tuskegee experiments.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Where the United States Public Health Service watched black men in the Tuskegee area die of syphilis and in a sense not only noted the progress of the disease in these males, but specifically prevented them from being treated once treatment was available.
Cooperation was our way of life. And we were secure in that way of life. We didn't fight for it. We didn't have to fight for it. We just lived that way. And as far as we knew, we would just keep on living that way. So there was free software, but there was no free software movement. But then, our community was destroyed by a series of calamities that happened to it. Ultimately, it was wiped out. Ultimately, the PDP-10 computer, which we used for all our work, was discontinued. And, you know, our system, the incompatible time-sharing system, was written starting in the 60s, so it was written in assembler language. That's what you used to write an operating system in the 60s. So, of course, assembler language is for one particular computer architecture. If that gets discontinued, all your work turns into dust. It's useless. That's what happened to us. The 20 years or so of work of our community turned into dust. But before this happened, I had an experience that prepared me, helped me see what to do, helped prepare me to see what to do when this happened. Because at a certain point, Xerox gave the Artificial Intelligence Lab, where I worked, a laser printer. And this was a really handsome gift because it was the first time anybody outside Xerox had a laser printer. It was very fast, printed a page a second, very fine in many respects, but it was unreliable because it was really a high-speed office copier that had been modified into a printer. And you know, copiers jam, but there's somebody there to fix it. The printer jammed and nobody saw. So it stayed jammed for a long time. Well, we had an idea for how to deal with this problem. Change it so that whenever the printer gets a jam, the machine that runs the printer can tell our time-sharing machine and tell the users who are waiting for printouts or something like that, you know, tell them, go fix the printer. Because if they only knew it was jammed, of course, you know, if you're waiting for a printout and you know the printer is jammed, you don't want to sit and wait forever. You're going to go fix it. But at that point, we were completely stymied because the software that ran that printer was not free software. It had come with the printer, and it was just a binary. We couldn't have the source code. Xerox wouldn't let us have the source code. So despite our skill as programmers, after all, we'd written our own time-sharing system, we were completely helpless to add this feature to the printer software. And we just had to suffer with waiting. It would take an hour or two to get your printout because the machine would be jammed most of the time. And only once in a while, you'd wait an hour figuring, I know it's going to be jammed, I'll wait an hour and go collect my printout. And then you'd see that it had been jammed the whole time, and in fact nobody else had fixed it. So you fix it and you go wait another half hour. Then you come back, you see it jammed again before it got to your output. Would print 3 minutes and be jammed 30 minutes. Frustration up the wazoo.
Bob,
Possibly I can help a little bit.
Was it your line?
Oh, I don't remember who did it. Obviously, it's a poor one. But when we're talking about established norms, what we're trying to underscore, the fact is that, again, we're dealing with a natural function. For instance, if you get right down to it, there are no established norms as to how frequently one urinates in a 24-hour period. The law of supply and demand. If there's a great deal of fluid ingestion, there'll be more frequent opportunity or demand than if there's restriction. Same thing applies to sexual functioning. The reason we were emphasizing the fact that there are no established norms is exactly the reason that we never published the average length of the penis. Because if we had, everybody would have dashed for the ruler, every male at least, and the number of females, and we would have had a tremendous upsurge of help. The length of my penis in its flaccid state is not quite, quote, normal. You published, you say. There isn't such a thing as a norm in sexual functioning. There has to be the most important thing of all is that one considers this one, to Miles Saw, a natural function, and that one is comfortable with his or her natural functioning.
Adam Newton. We've been using it up for years. I wonder how long it will last. The resource, the reservoir, the capital asset, the step down write off, the tax credit. Occidental Oil used to have so many tax credits that they sold them to other corporations and actually made money and paid no tax at all. That was a good business for them. Adam Newton, still, new metaphysics. Riding on the back of the WZ Interplanetary Network. Right here in our backyard. And across this vast wasteland of ours on the internecine net. WZBC.org, which means we're good guys, because it's absolutely anti-capitalist. The supposition being that there's plenty, so much in fact, that the mere living of life brings even more of it. Again, the only real problem right now is that you're not being paid value units of things to listen for free. This is a gross disharmony with the universe. I'm very well aware of it. Technicians are standing by to correct the problem, but there's no clear ETA, and if I gave you one, I would be lying to you. Like a bureaucrat at the cable company or something. Whoever the hell owns it now. That's another lifetime. Time enough later for that. New metaphysics right now. Gary Geiserman. Strapped into the saddle again. And I am not using spurs, my friends, so don't call into the Jesuits, please. Or your congresspeople. Or corporate PR department or anything. Leave them out of it. It's between me and you. E and U. Get it? I've been thinking lately about the machine people. You know who they are. They're having their day in the sun at this point in the post-game of capitalism. That which happens after sudden death overtime, which happened in the mid to late 40s, I believe. So we've had a super myth going on since then, and what the hell, give the geeks a romp. Of various stripes, you know who they are. People without juice in their bodies. Not even embalming fluid. The running on sheer fiction. Finish the story. Start over. Don't refer to yourself. And by all means, for God's sakes, don't take anything in from the outside, please. Could get germs and things. Die. Carcass-eating virus or something like that. Talking fiction now. Bear with me. Now, when things get to their extreme, they do change to their opposite. This is a norm, a meme, a convention that does work, is true. If for no other reason, boilerplate, look it up. Call your legal authority person if you need help. And I see these machine people, children of the frozen food industry, following shortly in the coattails of the canned food industry, speeding its way to the microwave and the fast food industry, where one single hamburger can have parts from 2,000 different cows, all ground together with secret sauce and a milk of magnesia frosty shake. Set it all in place like in a Edgar Allan Poe story of some kind. Thus, the post story. Machines. Or high tech, whatever. That segment of modern science in step with reality. Predictable. Finally getting within sight of artificial white man's dream, which is all colors of people. Everybody's white today, I believe, except the ones who are stepping on hidden landmines in some godforsaken fourth, fifth, and sixth world miasma out there beyond the border of your body. And they are building a machine matrix very close to ground zero of knowledge, artificial knowledge. And thus the dream of modern man fulfilled. Know nothing, say nothing, is nothing. thus proving the point of the entire exercise. Now, it's rare that I get this expositional about fiction. But as an artist, creative, fevered, impassioned being, I feel coerced into doing so right now. Maybe it's the radio, I don't know. And this machine matrix with machine people and our local gods at Microsoft to keep everybody on the proper path to the center of the ground zero. Finally, QED, my friends. The destiny of all prior failed cults has come within earshot. If we can finish this fucker off, we'll really have something. Write home about it. Please don't hack my computer. Thank you.
What is, after all, is example, we tease the male a bit about females. What is the norm of the female breast size?
But the thing that made it worse was knowing that we could have fixed it, but somebody else, for his own selfishness, was blocking us, obstructing us from improving the software.
Oh, I failed to mention the point of the whole story. That the holders of the flame today, close to the center of gravity, are the machine people. So, I'm with yous. Don't hack my computer. Thank you. Thus, to change to its opposite, go right on to the next page.
So, of course, we felt some resentment. And then I heard that somebody at Carnegie Mellon University had a copy of that software. So I was visiting there later, so I went to his office and I said, "Hi, I'm from MIT. Could I have a copy of the printer source code?" And he said, "No, I promised not to give you a copy." I was stunned. I was angry, and I had no idea how I could do justice to it. All I could think of was to turn around on my heel and walk out of his room. Maybe I slammed the door. And I thought about it later on, because I realized that I was seeing not just an isolated jerk, but a social phenomenon that was important and affected a lot of people. This was, for me, I was lucky, I only got a taste of it. But other people had to live in this all the time. So I thought about it at length. See, he had promised to refuse to cooperate with us, his colleagues at MIT. He had betrayed us. But he didn't just do it to us. Chances are he did it to you too. And I think most likely he did it to you too. He probably did it to you as well.
WZBC out of Newton. Important announcement. Probably in the machine culture is the only area where science is actually truthful. Everything else, except that balkanized Byzantine maze, miasma, black hellhole of digital technology tools, everything else is more wrong than you'll ever even be able to nostalgically remember later. God knows, certainly not now. Or I'm not Gary Geiserman.
He probably did it to you as well. He probably did it to most of the people here in this room, except a few maybe who weren't born yet in 1980. Because he had promised to refuse to cooperate with just about the entire population of the planet Earth. He had signed a non-disclosure agreement.
There's a balance to be had there, where people are being entertained on the one hand, but there's something going on underneath.
Others landing in that area, Egypt, or in northern, northwestern Africa, the Berbers, the Moors, or in central or south Africa, the various primitive, quote-unquote, tribes that are steeped in a rich spirituality that confounds your academicians. Those that were at the root of civilization in that the land of Sumer, now the Middle East, later to develop and evolve into that of the Jewish and Islamic faiths. Those that landed in the European areas to form the mystery schools, those in the Far East, in India, and in the mountains of Nepal, and in China, and in the Malaysian areas and Indochina regions, those even in Australia, the Aboriginals, and those in the South Sea Islands, and those of South America, even the Mayan civilizations and the subsequent Inca, Aztec, Toltec, and indeed American Indian and current Peruvian Indian heritages.
These turkeys didn't want to go into the sun. As we pushed from behind, they compacted. It was like an old adventure movie where the walls are closing in, but there was no wall at the end, only a patch of sunlight which the turkeys would not touch. We yelled louder, waved our cloths, kicked at the ones in the rear. Finally, Daddy walked through the solid carpet of turkeys to break the logjam at the front. He stood at the edge of the sunlight, lifting the turkeys three or four at a time with his feet, stirring them with his legs, forcing them into the sun. Suddenly, they broke free.
Now, that happened to her. So in a sense, she paid the price for what she was about to do.
About some Hollywood star busted for drugs or something else that doesn't really matter much in the long run.
So, the text there, the language that's used throughout the book and the discussions of syphilis in blacks by doctors,
in a sense, to me, reminds me a great deal of the discussion of AIDS in blacks today. I personally don't think that AIDS is a racially specific disease. Now, let me tell you why I say that. The real reason is AIDS is a highly mutagenic virus. It has a tremendous capability of mutating and changing itself. And you can think of AIDS as sort of being like The Thing. I don't know if you ever saw the science fiction movie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, The Thing, which jumps from person to person and changes itself
mm-hmm.
to mirror the person that it's in. The same thing is true with AIDS. It jumps from person to person, and then when it infects a new person, it changes itself and reflects that person's characteristics.
Jermaine was a pretty ruthless guy, pretty cold-hearted. Someone you really wouldn't want to meet up with in a dark alley.
He may not have been a gang member, but I'm sure he knew of them living in Milwaukee. And all of a sudden he had some status thrust upon him, and I believe he may have started living some of that here, or not necessarily correcting people.
Derek had just come into being. He had just gained some power. He had just gained some acknowledgement. And now this other young man moves in, and he threatens all of that. He's moving in on your gang status.
So in that way, you know, you see these female animals going through where their bodies are define them, and their gender defines them. And women go through the same thing, where you have the reduction of living beings to commodities. So in situations like pornography and rape, prostitution, women are equated only with their bodies. And in the abuse of animals, it's the same thing. We take what we want.
Shining a light on something that's honest, you can influence people. You're not influencing them to an end. You're influencing them to a process, to perhaps seeing the world in a different way.
Like paths of spirituality that were exploded with the destruction of Atlantis, and like a plant going to seed, that seed carried by the elements of air, of water, of fire, and of earth, to be planted and to grow new growth, to start over again. And those paths becoming then the very unique, the very particular, the very... like paths of spirituality that were exploded with the destruction of Atlantis, and like a plant going to seed, that seed carried by the elements of air, of water, of fire, and of earth, to be planted and to grow new growth, to start over again. And those paths becoming then the very unique, the very particular, the very personal spiritual heritage. You see, it is not just your bloodline by any means. Perhaps for some of you it's not your bloodline at all. But it is the spiritual heritage, combined with the influence of Atlantis, the influence of Lemuria, and infused with the energy of Sirius itself. These four components producing a fusion, not a fission to divide apart, but a fusion to merge, to meld together. And it is this synergy, this fusion, that is your heritage, which and your influence of Atlantis, and your influence of Lemuria, and your influence of Sirius, all together that combine to produce your ancestry. So the spiritual ancestry, if you will, is like this umbrella with four very active, very vibrant components of Sirius, of Lemuria, of Atlantis, and of a very personal heritage that is somewhere placed in your world. It could be yet still placed in Atlantis or in Lemuria, but somewhere upon your earth, upon the terra firma, that heritage is placed. Those four components combine to produce the ancestry. And to tap that power, to understand that power, to work with that power, it is very important to begin by unfolding that which is the heritage. That which is the heritage.
Kind of deliberate painting like that was less than 100,000 years. It's maybe about 40,000 years old or so. So to have this kind of evidence at 400,000 years was really quite shocking for them, because they think their ideas that humans like us weren't existing at that time. Basically, they think that around that time, the ape man, the Homo erectus, should have been living. And so they're sort of puzzling. Well, they're saying, well, maybe Homo erectus was more advanced than we thought, but the evidence that I've documented suggests there's another answer to their puzzle, namely that indeed humans like us were in fact around at that time and were responsible for that paint kit that they found at Twin Lakes in Zambia. Another similar case came out just earlier this year. It was about a discovery that was made in northern Japan by some archaeologists working there at a place called Chichibu, a little north of Tokyo. And there they found evidence for what they regarded as a habitation site, a place where some huts had been erected. And the evidence took the form of some post holes that had been drilled into some volcanic layers there. And it was obvious to them that someone had, inserted, tree trunks into those post holes and covered over, that structure, that superstructure, with either skins or branches to make a hut. Now, this site was about 500,000 years old, and so again they were puzzling about it because the oldest evidence that they have for any kind of hut was far younger than that, hundreds of thousands of years younger than this particular site in Japan. What modern historians will say, they'll say, well, back so far, back to around 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, they're historical. They're genuine historical records. But when they go back further than that, they say, well, that's mythological. But I have to question that. Because, I mean, there's so much evidence, you know, that human beings like us have, you know, been around. And not at necessarily a very primitive level of culture either.
As stubbornly as they had refused to go into the light, they now rushed toward it. They ran in a panic, piling on top of each other, knocking down the temporary fence. By the time Daddy could get the doors closed, at least 1,000 turkeys had escaped and were running free on the farm, onto our neighbor's farm, into the road. We didn't own the turkeys. We raised them for a company that owned the hatchery, the feed mill, the fleet of trucks that delivered and loaded the turkeys, the processing plant. We got a portion of the profits. If there were profits. With 1,000 turkeys gone, there would be no profits on this flock. Weeks of Daddy working 14-hour days.
What is pointing at? Well, now, let me tell you why this is important. You recognize Furman, personification of evil. When he's doing that, he's trying to tell you this is some important piece of evidence here.
But you can imagine what would have happened if this had happened to other people. Going off in Grand Central Station, say. Now, I'm not just surmising that they were planning these anti-personnel attacks on people. The weathermen have said this themselves. Bernadine Dorn released a statement in December in which she talked about this, and she frankly admitted that this group was planning this kind of a random attack on just people around.
Victims. And the lesson it taught me was that non-disclosure agreements have victims. They're not innocent. They're not harmless. Most programmers first encounter a non-disclosure agreement when they're invited to sign one. And there's always some temptation, some goodie they're going to get if they sign. So they make up excuses. They say, well, he's never going to get a copy no matter what, so why shouldn't I join the conspiracy to deprive him? They say, this is the way it's always done. Who am I to go against it? They say, if I don't sign this, someone else will. Various excuses to gag their consciences. But when somebody invited me to sign a non-disclosure agreement, my conscience was already sensitized. It remembered how angry I had been when somebody promised not to help me and my whole lab solve our problem. And I couldn't turn around and do the exact same thing to somebody else who had never done me any harm. You know, if somebody asked me to promise not to share some useful information with a hated enemy, I would have said yes. You know, if somebody's done something bad, he deserves it. But strangers, they haven't done me any harm. How could they deserve that kind of mistreatment? You can't let yourself start treating just anybody and everybody badly. Then you become a predator on society. So I said, thank you very much for offering me this nice software package, but I can't accept it in good conscience on the conditions you were demanding. So I will do without it. Thank you so much.
WZBC out of Newton. Played in certain island nations in the Orient instead of the emergency broadcast network sirens. That's the effect it can have on whole populations. Unless we help them. Nico playing next week, live in the A studio, instead of this canned, artificial, repackaged, microwaved, in tinfoil music that we normally have. So Nico next week, live with a full bank of respirators to keep him jacked up, playing over, under, and between me next week, as I will gerrymander the human voice into a contortionist of the exponential rank for fun and fun. Profit was had by all.
And so I have never knowingly signed a non-disclosure agreement for generally useful technical information such as software. Now, there are other kinds of information which raise different ethical issues. For instance, there's personal information. You know, if you wanted to talk with me about what was happening between you and your boyfriend and you asked me not to tell anybody, I could agree to keep that a secret for you, because that's not generally useful technical information. At least it's probably not generally useful. There is a small chance, it is a possibility though, that you might reveal to me some marvelous new sex technique. And I would then feel a moral duty to pass it on to the rest of humanity so that everyone can get the benefit of it. So I'd have to put a proviso in that promise, you know. If it's just details about who wants this and who's angry at whom and things like that, the soap opera, that I can keep private for you. But something that humanity could tremendously benefit from knowing, I mustn't withhold. You see, the purpose of science and technology is to develop useful information for humanity to help people live their lives better. If we promise to withhold that information, if we keep it secret, then we are betraying the mission of our field. And this I decided I shouldn't do. But meanwhile, my community had collapsed, and that was collapsing, and that left me in a bad situation. You see, the whole compatible time sharing system was obsolete because the PDP-10 was obsolete. And so there was no way I could continue working as an operating system developer the way I had been doing it. That depended on being part of the community, using the community software and improving it. That no longer was a possibility. And that gave me a moral dilemma. What was I going to do? Because the most obvious possibility meant to go against that decision I had made. The most obvious possibility was to adapt myself to the change in the world, to accept that things were different and that I'd have to just give up those principles and start signing non-disclosure agreements for proprietary operating systems and most likely writing proprietary software as well. But I realized that that way I could have fun coding and I could make money, especially if I did it other than at MIT. But at the end, I'd have to look back at my career and say, I have spent my life building walls to divide people. And I would have been ashamed of my life. So I looked for another alternative, and there was an obvious one. I could leave the software field, do something else. Now, I had no other special noteworthy skills, but I'm sure I could have become a waiter. Not at a fancy restaurant. They wouldn't hire me, but I could be a waiter somewhere. And many programmers, they say to me, the people who hire programmers demand this, this, and this. If I don't do those things, I'll starve. It's literally the word they use. Well, you know, as a waiter, you're not going to starve. So really, they're in no danger. But, and this is important, you see, because sometimes you can justify doing something that hurts other people by saying, otherwise something worse is going to happen to me. You know, if you were really going to starve, you'd be justified in writing proprietary software. If somebody's pointing a gun at you, then I would say it's forgivable. But I had found a way I could survive without doing something unethical. So that excuse was not available. So I realized, though, that being a waiter would be no fun for me, and it would be wasting my skills as an operating system developer. It would avoid misusing my skills. Developing proprietary software would be misusing my skills. Encouraging other people to live in the world of proprietary software would be misusing my skills. But so it's better to waste them than misuse them, but it's still not really good. So for those reasons, I decided to look for some other alternative. What can an operating system developer do that would actually improve the situation, make the world a better place? And I realized that an operating system developer was exactly what was needed. The problem, the dilemma, existed for me and for everyone else because all the available operating systems for modern computers were proprietary. The free operating systems were for old obsolete computers, right? So for the modern computers, if you wanted to get a modern computer and use it, you were forced into a proprietary operating system. So if an operating system developer wrote another operating system and then said, everybody come and share this, you're welcome to this, that would give everybody a way out of the dilemma, another alternative. So I realized that there was something I could do that would solve the problem. I had just the right skills to be able to do it. And it was the most useful thing I could possibly imagine that I'd be able to do with my life. And it was a problem that no one else was trying to solve. It was just sort of sitting there, getting worse. And nobody was there but me. So I felt, I'm elected. I have to work on this. If not me, who? So I decided I would develop a free operating system or die trying. Of old age, of course.
You know, did we really want to commit to each other? And I remember once we decided we were to sit in a cafeteria downtown and took a kind of marriage vow or vow to remain with each other and make sure that we each got into heaven and not go into heaven without each other's presence. So I was about 28, Peter was about 21 or 2. But I remember when we made this vow of celestial, heavenly, earthly, immortal fidelity, that once I realized he was making it and I was making it, there's something broke open, and it was like the heavens showered with gold, that finally I found somebody that loved me as I loved them, and the first time I felt accepted in my life completely. Peter had some other similar sense of an opening of a soul.
Loop out. Cabin light on. Energy
stimulus
feeder
out. Dream
monitor
out.
Music
circuit in.
11:59:30.
Monitor.
Bing.
Hours.
Rolling tape.
51.
All right, old buddy. This is the tape you've been waiting for. Wake up time. You should just be toughening to consciousness now, and you just want to keep still while you warm up. Assuming the system doesn't cut in on us, it ought to take about 3 minutes from now. All right, I'm going to start a count.
100.
You're counting back now. Focus both eyes on the PSI indicator light.
96, 95.
Now, buddy, I know it's been a long haul for you. The system should be running some figures now on the vitals. If you're still on the green, we'll do the memory test. And restore the con to you, Cap.
85, 84.
End tape 51.
82, 81.
System in.
Below mark.
You are
A-OK.
Punch up.
BMF.
Perform.
Basic manual function.
Clip.
You are
A-OK.
Mark.
Do not.
Voice operate.
System.
Please. You are
not
in
control. Rolling tape.
52.
Happy New Year, Mark. This is Angela, and we're going to let you wake up to some really schmoozy programming. But first, let's do a memory check. I bet. Don't worry about being groggy. I know you'll be doing just fine. I've got a funny one for you. Channel 001. Who was Dewey Duck?
Huh?
System in.
Your
audio
out. Repeat. System
what?
Indicate
failure.
Difficulty.
Failure.
In.
Light
drain battery.
Repeat count.
Ding.
Please.
Testing 4. Testing 5.
Good morning.
Dewey was Donald's nephew. At least that's what he and Daisy claimed. And if anybody's listening down there, I've got a terrible backache here.
That's right, Mark. Now, on the red channel, read the system your vitals.
Mark. Mark. Mark T, Captain, Signs of Life. Green, elapsed time of sleep in 24-hour units. 3, 4, 3, 2.
Buddy, glad to be awake, too.
Listen, I can remember it.
Mom, Xander, we'll be seeing you in just a little while.
We're here now, and we'll probably still be home to say hello, old buddy. God, run.
You just do grabs until your muscles come back. The system will roll an exciting new entertainment tape for you. Bye-bye.
Keep sewing, Mark.
Me working alongside him anytime we weren't in school, all for no pay. And if we weren't paid for this flock, we would have no cash coming in until the next flock was raised. It took us 8 hours to round up the escaped turkeys, four of us trying to track down 1,000 birds that had the whole world in which to hide and run from us. The sun beat down and the air was thick and humid. We stopped once for water, and my sister Billy, the youngest of us, just 11, vomited from the cold water hitting her stomach after hours of sun, heat, and dehydration. As she lay on the ground, shaking and holding her stomach, I hated her for being the one too sick to continue. But even she was not too sick. We all went on. She got an extra 5 minutes to rest, but we all went on. You may be asking right now how my father could be so cruel, how he could work young girls like that. Or you may think I'm exaggerating, that self-pity has magnified our distress. I tell you, this is no exaggeration. And I tell you, my father had no choice. Or any choice he had was so far in the past that there was no unraveling it.
They're a lot more connected. I mean, one thing that doing this huge conglomerate like we have with the meat industry is that people are separated from what they're actually eating. Supermarket and buy it.
Right.
Whereas in other cultures, you might actually raise that animal. And the cost to the planet's a lot lower. But at least on some level, like, it's a little bit, you're a little bit closer to it. But
That's going to change, though, as globalization spreads, which is
right.
So scary. You know, we have a few major trade agreements facing us, the free trade area of the Americas. Before that, there was the thankfully defeated multilateral agreement on investments that would have expanded free trade throughout the world. Now they're just going for the Western Hemisphere. But, you know, as free trade expands, we're going to see the expansion of factory farming in third world countries. And that, of course, will perpetuate that kind of distance between the product and the consumption of the product, which is really scary.
Right.
The following program contains material many will find objectionable. We urge you to listen to the entire show before making any judgments.
W the Z, friendly neighborhood outlet of One World Product. Oh, but that capitalism is so boring already. Except for the machete blow, which is always of dynamic interest, of course. Where the lash of the whip. Almost an archetype today. New Metaphysics, Gary Geiserman. Call me Mr. Gary Geiserman. Advancing one checkerboard square after another in the eternal quest to come back to the other side. And what follows? 90.3 FM in the FM and the PM on the FM radio. The big R. Not to be confused with RR or RRR. Certainly not. Every and each week, as the calendar turns, following in the footsteps of the Roman gladiators who invented the big wheel of turning.
I must say that I did not come to Los Angeles to tiptoe through the tubes. I didn't come to pussyfoot. I didn't come to dilly-dally. I didn't come to beat around the bush. I didn't come to lighten up. I came to tighten up.
My words exactly, friends. Don't fuck around with your media man. Your friendly neighborhood outlet. From the media, big tank of water up on the hill of the small town outlet. Because you could be cut off. You could have a phone company monopoly running your stream. So watch out. That's capitalism again. Kind of boring, as I've said earlier. Thus, to create truth in the telling. Never use less than two facets of any gem. You know that. Preferably three or more. Because I'm from the other side before it comes back to the other side. Or my name isn't John Q. Public. Gary G. Ford, Mac.com. High-tech secret special mail for the major. Gary G. Ford at Mac.com if you have special clearance to send an electronic message over the infrastructure of the insides of the outside of the shell, traveling ionically back and forth across the membrane at the speed of chemical transfer, which is pretty fast, but not as fast as it could be, even on Earth. Nico next week, live with music. Archive shows coming soon, so you can listen and bother yourselves whenever you want. course, it'll be laundered through digital technology. So, I can't be litigated against in the moral courts. And that's always a good thing.
All praise is due to Allah. So I say to all of you, good evening. This is the Truth Hour. And don't you touch that dial.
NewMetaphysics.com coming up. Special deal with Microsoft to insubscribe you because the real big show is about to begin come October. Already started, actually. Microsoft 2 coming at you. It's a sequel. If you thought the first one was a run for your money, as quoted earlier in time, what's wrong today is worse than anyone can imagine, and what's good that's coming up is better than anyone can now allow, to say nothing of imagine. Microsoft 2, part of the first half of that quotation. Coming through every kind of digital technology known to the populace. Make Ebola look like a mere bag of shells. And no, I am not exaggerating. Of course, like many predictions, there's a high probability you won't be there. High probability.
You stay tuned in. Don't you let some hook-nosed, bagel-eating, lox-eating, just crawled out of the caves and hills of Europe, perpetrating the fraud so-called wannabe Jew, make you believe that they are the chosen people of God. You are the chosen people of God. You are the people who fulfill the Bible prophecies and scriptures of the chosen people of God.
Circle ends where it begins, and it begins where it ends. And the fourth component of this masterful synergy, of this masterful fusion of ancestry, begins and ends with your personal heritage. You see, you have influence from that of Sirius, and also you have had, all of you, we would suggest, well, probably 99% of you, have had lifetimes in that land that is Lemuria, and have had lifetimes in that place that is Atlantis. And out of that you have gained and gathered a tremendous depth and wealth of spirituality. And subsequent to that, the many lifetimes that you've lived in your now called modern world, indeed, you have explored that spirituality, sometimes repeating, sometimes innovatively investigating and discovering. But somewhere along the line, there is a series of lifetimes, perhaps even a singular lifetime, where in a sense you posited or deposited your spirituality. Your heritage, in that sense, is that series of lifetimes, or that study of spirituality that is most indigenous to your vibration, that is most resonant with your vibration. regardless of your current race or current life background, you may have, for example, a Celtic heritage. And therefore, the type of technique that works from the Celtic understanding would work for you most clearly. Or you may have an Egyptian heritage, or an Islamic heritage, or a Far Eastern heritage, and therefore the techniques that are most associated with those heritage would be techniques that would work for you in this particular incarnation more effectively, more powerfully, would add to a richness and to a depth. And therefore, there is tremendous value in understanding and discovering exactly what that heritage is all about. And that's what our intent is in this time of accelerating your journey, accelerating your spiritual journey. Our goal here is not to discover this heritage so that you can relive it. No, you've already lived it. And that's a mistake many will make. If you discover American Indian heritage, it doesn't mean you start dressing like an American Indian or you start building totems in your backyard. If you discover that you have a Celtic past, it doesn't mean that you have to start tying knots and doing macrame. If you have, in that same thing, a South American past, it doesn't mean you have to head off to Peru and that you somehow have to commune with Machu Picchu or anything of that sort. Or if indeed Oriental, that you have to go study this tradition. No, you've already done that. No, and that's a mistake, as we say, that many will make, to think they are to recreate that heritage. No, the goal is to draw upon it. You have done that heritage, but now, dear ones, you're involved in what is a new age that is far more reaching than that heritage is. But still, you need to draw upon it, to draw upon the tradition of that spirituality, to use it. The heritage is where you deposited your spiritual tradition, where you formalized and pulled together the impact of Sirius or the Pleiades, of Atlantis and of Lemuria. The heritage is like the pinnacle of your ancestry and therefore worth discovering. It is also that where you came the closest to going home, where you came the closest to finding your way home and finding your soul's path. And that's why we incorporate the sense of one's heritage in the exploration of all three, going home, finding your path, and finding your way home. For some reason, within that heritage, within that tradition, you set down your spirituality. You backed away, perhaps out of tragedy, perhaps out of very positive reason, perhaps out of misunderstanding or for great clarity, but you backed away. And basically said, no, I'm not going home yet. I'm going to put down this tradition. And subsequently, in the last many hundreds of years of lifetimes, you have been exploring, searching, reaching. And it is now time to return to that tradition.
uncompromising standard of his practice. He never meets any of his clients. He doesn't speak with them, or for that matter, communicate in any direct fashion. It's his policy. But I am his sole representative, and he is my only employer. And as such, I have full authorization to speak on his behalf on all his matters of business. I have with me a signed letter to that effect. He doesn't negotiate his fee. He works at a flat rate. Under some unusual circumstances, he'll work pro bono, never in between.
I suppose I don't qualify for the latter category.
I haven't heard your proposal yet.
Well, I have a feeling that mine is not a charity case.
Most aren't.
Mr. Arlo, you realize this is all very strange. You realize this is all very strange. I mean, nobody in your field asks the kind of money your employer does. And nobody communicates via a messenger. It's all very unusual, all very unusual.
Let me tell you about the case of the man with the mismatched shoelaces. This was many years ago when I first came into his employ. He was contracted to find a man. I'm afraid I can't give much in the way of detail, but believe me when I say that if this man had not been located, our country's good diplomacy with a certain economic superpower might have a distinctly different face today. Federal, state, local authorities all over the world were searching around the clock for a face whose significance they couldn't fathom. He'd vanished without a trace. On the eighth morning of the search, I was contacted by a non-political third party with an unrelated private agenda. Prior to this day, my employer had never heard of this missing man, knew nothing about him. After just 1 hour of desk work, just an hour after accepting the case, he picked up the telephone.